A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're listening to the GAA Hour with Darren O'Sullivan on Sports Joe.
How are we doing? Welcome to the GAA Hour with me, Darren O'Sullivan. I'm delighted to be joined in studio by Dublin's Barry Cahill and the New Yorker, Eamon McGee. Barry, how are things?
All good, Darren, after Croke Park visit yesterday, so good form today.
You're all happy up here again. Yeah. And Eamon, any bit of a twang after your holidays?
No, just glad to get back to the more quiet life. New York's a bit hectic for a country man like myself now. But no, well looked after, and I have to give a shout out to Keelan McLaughlin. He bought me dinner. He says I need to give him a shout out on the pod. So how's it going, Keelan?
And I'm just delighted you took off your I Love New York t-shirt.
I left all the bags at the door there, and the hat and all that now. So it's a chaotic town now. Crazy town. Good to get back.
I thought you might get a transfer now, be ready for the Taliesin Cup.
I was on trial for a few clubs over there now.
Didn't work out.
No.
Look, it was another weekend of big action around the place. I'm going to stop doing predictions, I think, going forward, because I'm getting all of them wrong. But Monaghan Derry, it lived up to expectations. I suppose the one question I would have is, why didn't Monaghan watch the Tyrone game? They looked like they hadn't seen Derry play before.
Yeah, that seems to be the general consensus, that, you know, the way Monaghan went at it. You know, I watched it over by there, and very, very surprised, because Monaghan, the backroom team, they're no mugs. They would have had a lot of video footage, and for them, I would just love to know what was the logic to go at that game, because there was so much kind of video there between league and from the Tyrone game to say this is not the way you approach Derry.
Yeah, and Barry, Derry, going into it, I actually thought, no, Monaghan find the answers to all these. Mm. They're around a long time. And Derry, yeah, they're coming, but they set out another marker. They look to be the real deal. They kind of remind me a small bit of Roscommon, and I don't know if anyone agree with me. I think they can combine the running game and the kicking game quite good. I think they're going to be very dangerous going forward.
Yeah, very impressed with Derry again. I think we spoke a couple of weeks ago about, you know, it's a totally different mindset going into the Monaghan game, because, you know, they would have built up that Tyrone game for 6, 7, 8 months and going in as massive underdogs. Now, all of a sudden, like Damon's point there, they revealed their hand, obviously, against Tyrone. So I think the whole country knew what they were going to bring to the Athletics Ground then on Sunday against Monaghan. But very impressive. Obviously, the couple of goals in the first half really helped and gave them a platform. And, you know, there's some key individual brilliance as well from McGuinness and these guys, and the guys up front doing the damage as well. So, you know, I think Derry are here to stay. And, you know, a big thing that was mentioned there over the weekend as well, they have a huge amount of momentum now built up. There's a sort of goodwill within the county, within the team. You know, everyone's enjoying watching this sort of freshness that's come into the Ulster Championship, and knocking out the two big guns in Tyrone and Monaghan. You know, it's fair credit to them and the job that the management team have done as well. And, you know, they're certainly trending in the right direction.
Yeah, and you, Barry mentioned McInnes. He's for me, as a forward, he'd be someone you'd hate to mark, because he's going forward at pace and power. He's a scoring threat. But the way he drops back as well, he reads the game really well. Yeah. He's athletic, he's strong, he's physical. He seems to have everything at the moment, and as Barry was saying, they have momentum. I'd say the confidence is sky high by him, but he's key.
Yeah, he's key, and someone who I thought was just immense yesterday was Conor Glass, you know, in the second half when they needed him. And not that he was doing spectacular stuff, but he was just there at the right time, getting hands on ball, you know, making a catch, making a tackle. And they seemed to tick all the boxes, you know. Normally a team will, like, there's always one team that get one shock result every summer. I think Derry aren't going to be the team. Derry are looking like they're here to stay, as you said earlier on. Like they have the stoppers at the back in Rodgers and Chrissy. They have McGuigan there, they have Glass there, they have McInnes there. So I don't see where they're going now.
Yeah, McInnes actually reminds me a bit of Seamus Moynihan back in the day. You know,
it's
he
a
is
good
that
compliment.
Absolutely.
You built him up now.
Yeah.
But the fact, obviously, Seamus would have came back and played full back at certain stages as well. But he has that power at centre back that he's able to bomb forward and either get a score himself or attract the opposition defenders and lay it off. But also just the reading of his game. Mm. You know, he was brilliant at a couple of intercepts there in the first half in particular. So, you know, he's playing with a lot of freedom and, you know, it's sort of, you know, the shekels are off type of thing. Yeah. I'm just going out and going to play my game and it's up to everyone else to sort of, you know, put it up to me.
Yeah, it looks like enjoyable football. Like they all look, seem they feed off each other's energy as well, like, which is great. But from a Monaghan point of view, I think it was the 31st minute they got their first score in the first half. And I know they put up a fight in the second half. But as soon as the game ended, I just kept asking the question how and why. It was just very unlike Monaghan. And we'll talk about Derry more, but Monaghan promised so much, I think, coming into it. We had expectations for him. And maybe we got carried away with their last league win against Dublin and staying up. We thought maybe they were in a better place than they were. And it's obviously easy to talk in hindsight. But it's just, like I said, it was unlike Monaghan. Like you mentioned, their backroom team, how they got it so wrong. And they did put up a good second half, but the game was done.
Monaghan are going to do that anyway. Mm. Monaghan are going to bring that level of intensity, the hunger. Like, no one questions or no one's ever questioned their character. But for them to go out and set up that way, it was just kind of so surprising now. You're just looking at it, how not to go against Derry. And Monaghan did exactly that. They had weeks to prepare for this game. And it's just very, very surprising.
Yeah, and we mentioned on the show a few times about McCarron. And he was quiet yesterday. He got 4 points. They're all frees. And there are the games that we mentioned. Yes. You weren't going to build him up. And you said that until he starts doing it consistently in Championship. And look, he's a good player. I'm not singling him out. But it was, these are the type of games that you need, fellas, to help out McManus.
Yeah.
And these are the games where it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And over-reliance on him, this is where they always fall down. And we mentioned it before.
Connor, you know, just before the end of the first half, he went at it and he stuck over a brilliant point. He kind of started that rally that Monaghan, like, they went in at half time. There's a wee bit of momentum there. And he just needed McCarron to back him up at that time. And I will say, McCarron has been unbelievable throughout the leagues for the last few years, but he hasn't brought it to the Championship level. And I don't know if you remember, Barry, but Philly McMahon wrote an article about him, and the Monaghan lads got a chip on their shoulder about it, and they were kind of giving a bit of jip back to Philly. But, you know, Philly's still rightly.
Yeah, look, we're not signalling
no,
him out.
No, but he's a brilliant player.
Yeah.
But you have to do it in Championship.
It was all the forwards, really. Like, you know, these are the games, you know, where you're up against a team who were firing. Derry were firing. You're like going, can't be up to Connor to get us out of the jail again. And you need one or two. And it just didn't happen. And it was something, in fairness, you called it. You go, I'll give him all the praise in the world when he starts doing it in Championship consistent. And this was about all of them. That was a disappointing thing for me yesterday with Monaghan.
Yeah, McManus is still a very good footballer, you know, and still has an influence on the matches. I think he got 7 points yesterday, majority of them from frees. But, you know, it's probably been flagged the last 12, 18 months that he does need a bit more help and you need lads chipping in, whether it's Darren Hughes or, you know, lads around midfield or coming up from the half-back line. And they just haven't evolved enough to rack up those scores. I mean, it's all well and good doing it during the league and stuff like that, but it was surprising yesterday given the calibre of their management team and also the fact that Monaghan are a very seasoned, mature group of players, you know, that are used to Division 1 football for the last 8-10 years. you know, used to Ulster finals, All-Ireland quarterfinals, etc., that they actually went about yesterday's game in that type of manner, considering, you know, complete flip side with Derry coming in completely fresh and, you know, brand new to sort of the business end of an Ulster championship anyway. So, yeah, big surprise and a lot of head scratching, I'm sure, in the Monaghan camp today. And, you know, they'll have to go away now in the next sort of week, 10 days to really regroup and make sure they give the qualifiers a good rattle, because as we know, it's very competitive given the fact that there's no Division 3, Division 4 teams in it. There's no room for error anymore.
Yeah, and I suppose we talked about it last week as well, or 2 weeks ago. Rory Gallagher, he's a fairly intense, passionate man on the sideline. I thought he was quite tame yesterday.
That's the short for he's a header. Like,
a couple of cans of Red Bull, I think, just before throwing.
I had to laugh at his reaction to the first goal, because you're kind of like, normally you're like going, you get a goal like that, keep your powder dry, keep calm. Not sideline, your man was going absolutely bonkers. Like, just great TV, great to watch, but he must be exhausted after games.
You can hear it in his voice. Like, he'll actually need an operation on his vocal cords in about 10 years, because he's just roaring and shouting. And, you know, I've been there. I've been where he's at you all the time. He's in the go all the time.
That's just his nature.
That's his nature. And, you know, you hear a lot of talk about coaches nowadays. All the manuals say that you have to separate yourself. You know, the best place to be is up in the stand, and you make your really analytical calls and
cool and calm and collected and all that.
And Roy Garris is complete opposite. And it seems to work. Like, so the whole thing is, like, whatever works for you. And
the players seem to be feeding off it as well.
They respond to it.
Well, that's the thing, like you were saying, players feed off it. Like, you couldn't not be pumped up and hyped for a game. Mm. I'd imagine if you're in a dressing room with him, he's giving a bit of a talk just before you go out. But take away the passion and the celebrations, and we'd have a bit of a laugh on, it's great. He has to be up there with the top coaches in the country, and maybe with what he's doing and the turnaround in Derry, and not just Derry, he's doing this for a number of years now, and maybe it's his only now he's going to start getting the credit maybe he deserves, because...
Well, I played with Rory with St Bridges there for 6-7 years, and you could tell from when he was in his mid-20s that he had a coach's mindset. So it wasn't a case that he, you know, finished his inter-county career and even his club here and decided, I'm going to be a club coach. He was actually a full-time club coach in Bridges at the time. So, you know, you could see that was part of his DNA, and he was always thinking sort of analytically around coaching and formations and drills and that type of stuff as well. So he probably had a bit of a head start. And, you know, he's been around a lot of clubs and a lot of counties at this stage as well, so he's picked up a lot of good information and training and stuff like that under his belt. But there's no doubt, like, he is a full time committed modern day inter-county manager, coach, whatever you might be, and is putting everything into it. And, you know, he's probably learnt along the way as well from his, obviously under Jim, but also probably as a manager in Donegal in particular. And
I think that's the big
one.
I think he's learned,
he's evolved.
And there's nobody out there that's going to get matchups better than Rory, because his knowledge of the game, his knowledge of players is second to none now. He will get every matchup 100%.
Which makes the final even more interesting.
I'm going to get to that later. He jumped last week there when I was looking for predictions. He went hiding, so I get him no less.
The broadband, the Donegal broadband, we need to call it
selective
out here.
But I'm curious to know that actually, because you obviously were in a dressing room with him. How he was in the dressing room when he wasn't the top man. Let's say he was under Jim, and Jim's obviously the main man, and was it a case of he sat back, or was he as animated and energetic around the place, or would he be somebody now would get you going or got you going before games? Because obviously it's a different ballgame when you're the main man.
Yeah, no, it was, like, Jim was obviously the main man, so he's really vocal and he was leading the thing, but Rory was nearly the perfect foil to him, and he came in and he just added his bits and pieces. So if you were given a percentage, you'd probably, Rory would have been 40%. And I will say that the key to that success with the Donegal thing was, you know, you had Jim, you had Rory, and you had Michael Murphy, the three of them driving the whole thing. And, you know, Rory, and I think that's the big thing he's learned, because I don't think he was at it when he came in with Donegal. Like, we all went for Rory, we wanted Rory Geller to be the manager, but he just needed to go a wee bit more, and he seems to be at that point now where he's ready to be an inter-county manager. And he's, as Barry says, he's learned along the way.
Yeah, I suppose you can't get much better than that, to go and just keep learning and getting better, because, like, I suppose as many managers found out, you don't just fall into it and it clicks straight away, and dealing with different characters and different expectations. I suppose he probably went into the Derry job in a prime time, you know.
Yeah.
on the way back, because like I remember going back playing two league finals, 2008 and 2009 against Derry, and they kind of fell away to...
Yeah.
They were at a low ebb, you know, so you would have liked to think that they could only go one direction in terms of getting better. But he seems to have galvanised the group, and he actually, there's now a sense within Derry that you want to be a Derry inter-county player, which probably wasn't the case for a number of years, where guys would like, okay, I'm just going to focus on the club and still have a social life or whatever that might be. Now guys are willing to commit to 9-10 months, which is required to be a serious inter-county footballer, and I think guys have fed off Rory in that sense, and you know he's encouraged that buy-in amongst the group as well.
Yeah, and I suppose look, they've two hurdles out of the way. They've another big one to come, an Ulster final. I don't think anyone would have predicted at the start a Derry Donegal final, and I'm not going to be trying to put you under pressure, but I will. If I'm Donegal,
is it that time?
I'd be nervous. I actually think, like, teams now all of a sudden, I don't think Derry are fearing anyone because they have that momentum. They have that bit of confidence that's just been building and building. But I actually think teams now are going to start looking at Derry going, how do we go about them? Mm-hmm. And I think Derry are going to start bringing a bit of fear. And I think Donegal might be nervous going into this
game. Donegal will be wary. I mean, even last year they played each other in the Championship, you know, and Derry should have got something out of that match. You know, Paddy McBurty obviously got a brilliant last kick winner against him in the Championship, and you know there was no back door for Derry. I think Derry would have done very well in the back door and probably got back into the All-Ireland race if that existed last year. So Donegal will be wary given the fact that they played him, you know, less than 12 months ago, and they put it up to them, and obviously Derry have got better since then. And then I suppose the thing with Donegal is whenever I watch them, I always feel there's more in them. Like every time I watch them, this is going back the last 5 years, going back to, you know, 2019 to when they played Mayo and Castlebar, every time I look at them, I was like, geez, there should be another level here in Donegal. But I still haven't seen it. So, you know, I think they'll need to bring it the next day.
It's going to come. It's going to come.
Hold on, do we get that? It's definitely coming.
No, listen, and, you know, a lot of people would say that. I'm kind of biased in whatever I do or any judgment calls I make in Donegal. But you would know better, and I hear that a lot from outside the county, that there's more in Donegal and they need to kick on. And, you know, Rory has been about the club game in Donegal too. He knows the players inside out. As I said, goes back to my point about the matchups. He's going to get the matchups right. Mm. He's, you know, going to get him at Brent Rogers, Christy McCager, going to be in Murphy and Brent Murphy and Paddy McBrearty. And it's up to the other lads now in Donegal to step up, because, like, it's not even a banana skin. It's just that Derry are a good team that are capable of turning you over to.
And will that mean Declan Bonner has to come up with something in the next 2 weeks to maybe counter what Rory's thinking, you know, with a couple of positional changes or, you know, dummy teams or whatever it might be? You know, will they be like thinking in the background in
the
next few days?
Our tech? Like, you know, I'm looking at Shane McGuigan up front, and like we all know he's a great player, beautiful left foot. You're looking and going, can you keep him on his right side, which Monaghan couldn't do? Like, how do Derry or how do Donegal go about that? Because Donegal have enough for their own questions to answer, like, because that Derry forward line and the way they attack, similar to what Donegal do for so long, running from deep, running hard, running awkward, kind of almost like rugby lines, coming at an angle where, you know, defenders are only hanging out a lazy arm at times. So it's going to be interesting. Two teams that actually play quite similar styles as well.
I think just watching the game yesterday, a place where Donegal can get at Derry is the kickout. I think the way Derry are setting up on their own kickout and on opposition kickouts, that, you know, Declan and Stephen Rochford are going to be looking at it and say, this is, you know, a potential window or door to get a few scores, because Langan is a big player. You know, McBrearty and McMurphy are going to be coming for special attention, so Langan needs to step up here. And we need to see what we're going to do at McGuigan and how we stop them, boys.
And they put massive pressure on the Armagh kickout in that particular game. Like, they won 7 out of 9 kickouts or something like that in the first half, and that was really the platform for them to win that game. So yeah, naturally it's going to be a bit of homework being done now in the next sort of 7 to 10 days around the Derry kickout.
It'll be interesting how Derry do approach it. I see on Instagram, I think his name is GA Statsman, had it up, and I think Derry only won 57% of their own kick out. They do tend to go long a lot. And one of the standout scores for me in the second half was Emmett Bradley.
Full length of the pitch, yeah.
My God. But they'd lost a couple of kick outs in a row. They went short him. How he managed to travel all that distance up there and kick it over. It was a brilliant score. But they showed a bit of intelligence there. But like you said, Donegal have a lot of big players. You're not going to keep booting it out there because it will come back. And Donegal do have the forwards, and they have more than Monaghan to cause you trouble. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be another interesting.
It's really that sort of mid-distance kick out, I think, because that was a short, yeah, short kick out to,
yeah,
Bradley, and then obviously the long one is 70, 75 yards out, but it's the one to the wings or the 30 to 40 yard, yeah, kick that a goalkeeper can chip or a nice trajectory to a guy's
that
chest.
That seems to be the best one, you know, kick out now, yeah, but it's getting keepers to pull it off now.
Yeah. Yeah. And you need like two or three runs and wing backs creating space and all that type of stuff. It needs to be very finely tuned because it's high risk. You would have seen maybe, was it Westmeath? Goalkeeper had an intercepted, yeah, kick out yesterday, mm-hmm, by Kildare, and they got the goal. So it's high risk, but that's something that a goalkeeper really needs in his locker.
That's not something you do in 2 weeks.
No,
to be fair, like, look, I don't know. Maybe they have some other couple of plans, but it does seem to be first is boot it out, and if it's not there, try and get something very short. But you're not going to be running 70, 80 yards to get scores too often,
no,
that kind of way. So they will have to come up with something different, but I genuinely think if I'm in the Donegal dressing room now, they have more of a fear factor. Derry are on bonus territory, do you know? And I think it ramps up the pressure on Donegal going into it.
Yeah, well, it's sort of a free game for Derry, and they're not going to look at it that way because, you know, Ulster finals don't come around too often for Derry, and, you know, there's no Ulster championship medal there for a Derry footballer going back to, is this 90s, mid 90s, maybe
98, I think.
Yeah,
it was,
yeah, you know, with Toholt's time, you know. So, you know, they're not going to look at it as a free game, but it nearly is because they've done a lot of hard work already, and there's obviously going to be a back door to get to the knockout stages in Croke Park. But I think everything is pointing in Derry's direction at the moment. So, but again, it's up to the management team to keep a lid on that as well. You don't want guys getting ahead of themselves too much either.
No, I think Rory will do that. Mm. And, you know, you have to comment on Rory's backroom team. I've seen a video, you know, before they're walking in the dressing room, big Enda Muldoon was there now, and the Big Easy, they call him, up about Derry. And very intelligent player, so you can just see that the way they're working out. And, you know, one of the criticisms of Roy Geller down through the years was that he was defensive, he was kind of restricting players. But if you watched Derry yesterday, they were taking pops from, you know, a lot of places. And you said it earlier on, they seem to be enjoying it, and they seem there's a good freedom about them that they just go out and, you know, whatever happens.
No, I'm looking forward to the final. I actually think it's going to be a very exciting game, and every year we say the same about the provincials, only for Ulster, there'll be nothing going on. But a lot of the time with the Ulster Championship, it's tight and it's tetchy, mm-hmm, but the football has been excellent. Mm. And like,
potential will be the game of the year so far.
It could be, yeah. Oh, definitely, so far anyway. Yeah, and like, yeah. We're going to move on to Leinster, and we'll stick to your boys there, Barry. And I was there watching, and you're like, going, how do you talk about this? Look, Dublin were very good.
They were, yeah.
Dublin were back doing what I just call the basics very well.
Yeah. They look very fresh.
They do.
You know, very hungry, very sharp as
cranky.
Well.
And
doing a lot of the good stuff that they would have done during Jim Gavin's time in the Leinster Championship when they won these games in the first quarter, essentially. But, you know, they still got something out of the game in that, you know, they didn't build up, you know, a 7 or 8 point lead and the game just fizzles out. They still are trying to get things out of the game and so that when they finish after 75 minutes, they might have ticked a few boxes in terms of kick out or shot selection or scoring or working out on different things like that. So I was in at the game yesterday with the kids. It was a bit of a non-event, to be honest. It was, you know, there was 34,000 on Croke Park. It was a poor atmosphere. Dublin raced into, you know, 5-6 point lead early on, and there wasn't much for the crowd to get into. But, you know, I'm liking what I'm seeing with Dublin at the moment. You know, obviously you've got to put into context who they're up against in terms of Division 4 opposition against Wexford. And, you know, Meath, very much a mid-table Division 2 team that have certainly gone backwards, I think, in the last 12 months. So you got to weigh all that up. But I think for Dublin at the moment, they're doing a lot of things right. And the big thing for me and Desi Farrell going forward and all going well and they get through the Leinster final is, you know, they're trying to obviously build a bit of depth in the squad because they lost so many seasons. Multiple All-Ireland winners there with retirements the last couple of years. But I think from Desi's perspective, he'd love to have a couple of really good players on the bench that he can bring in that he doesn't have to start. And I think Gannon's done well enough, cornerback. Robbie McDade can come in there as well and start. Tom Lahiff midfield. Even Couple of guys starting up front yesterday that aren't seasoned guys, so they're able to bring on Johnny Cooper, they're able to bring on Niall Scully. Davey Byrne didn't play yesterday, Paddy Small came on, so I think Desi will need those guys in, against the Kerry or against the Donegal or Derry come All-Ireland semi-final time, all going well, and we'll rely on those guys coming on. So hopefully from a Dublin perspective they don't have to start them, because they'll need that experience coming off the bench. It was obviously a luxury that Jim Gavin had for a lot of big games for a number of years, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think Barry's right there in terms of, and Kerry had it against Cork in terms of they're doing just about enough. Yeah. They're doing grand. You're bringing on David Moore and you're bringing on Paul Murphy, you're bringing on Paul Gain, a seasoned player. So it is a case of Dublin actually need a few of their fringe players to pull up to a level that, right, we can start them here for 40 minutes. It allows us to leave it.
Get enough out of them.
Yeah. You can leave them, blow a head gasket out there, do, and then you're bringing on the cavalry, who are arguably better, because it is at that stage, and that's why Dublin were always better than all of us for so long. They had better players coming off the bench.
They had that spring from the bench. Yeah,
they never finished with a weaker team.
No,
and a lot of the other counties did. Yeah, you know.
So that's always they are just trying to get that balance right, I suppose, Dublin at the moment.
And you know, one of the things that would have stood out for me about Dublin during the league was, you know, their basic execution, the way they went about their business, was just so far removed from what we're used to seeing from them. And they seem to be, you know, they've found their path again. You know, they're probably never going to get to the level they were at, but they're, unfortunately for the rest of us, they're on that path again, or they're looking to, you know, they're not far away from it. And maybe were we quick to write them off? You know, I thought there was no way Dublin could win in All-Ireland and during the league. There was no way from what we were seeing.
Yeah.
This Dublin team go on and beat Kerry, you know, beat Tyrone, beat Donegal, but you know they're making noises again.
Yeah, it's that decision making piece really during the league. It was like a complete abandon. You know, some of the shot selection and passing from some seasoned players was like unrecognisable. You know, but it's back. I think
their accuracy yesterday. I think there was 18 scores from 19 shots.
Yeah.
Like, that's frightening stuff.
Yeah.
Like, to be fair,
and they turned down a lot of goal opportunities as well. Like if they wanted goals, they could have got them, but they were happy enough to keep the scoreboard ticking over.
It's like they got all the, they wanted to check out what they could do in the league, get rid of a couple of bad habits. The only thing that I've seen a small bit different is they've tried to be a bit more direct. They've gone, I think Fenton went for one long ball in the first half and he got blocked down. I think Merchant actually got a point off it.
Mm-hmm.
But then he went for another one diagonally and they ended up getting the penalty off it. So they're trying to bring that into their locker as well. But like the majority of the scores...
Been back now because he has that focal point?
Yeah, he's absolutely there. And obviously Dean Rock's inside. He's a big man. Well, like, I just think keeps defences honest as well. Like if you think everything's going to be popped in around the top of the, top of the D and you're trying to mark a fella from the front and all of a sudden he's winning behind... Mm-hmm. It just asks questions of the defence.
I was thinking about that in the goal for the Derry game. I was saying, you'll love this because just get the ball in. Like, there was no wild science to it. It was just get the ball in and they got
the
ball.
There's a lot to be said for it, you know. If you're, you know, confident in your players' ball-winning ability, and like Dublin are very much, whether it's Conn in there or Dean or Kieran Kenny. And the big thing for me with Dublin is they've so many scoring forwards there. There's very few teams that have six out and out defenders, you know. So you could do a job on Kieran one day or Scully or Conn, but you can't do a job on everyone, you know what I mean? There's a lot to go around there. Costello as well, or Paddy Small coming on, whoever that might be. So Dublin are definitely going in the right direction, albeit, you know, the standard of opposition they come against is
even
poor.
We didn't even bring it up there on top, but that goal, like Lynch comes out with it, he's travelling away, he's comfortable on the ball, nobody's going to leave the keeper have it. And it wasn't a difficult ball. It was a good ball. Look, I'll give him credit.
It was a good strike.
But it was a case of, I can overhit this because the defender's out in front of him. He was never going to clear the in line. Mm. It was a case of just don't drop a short.
Yeah.
Just don't drop a short. And even if the man and defender got a hand to it, it's breaking in and around the scoring zone.
Yeah, and it actually puts manners on the defender as well.
Yes, it does.
Because when we played in full-back lines in championship matches, and you're always a step in front and you're obviously anticipating the game, the ball coming in, etc. If you get caught once with the ball over the top, you're naturally two steps back then for the rest of the game.
I used to praise away Johnny Cooper because he showed a bit of balls or whatever you but you know, if you're getting that ball in, you know, he's not going to be as brave.
No, and like it is fortune favours brave, and people are on about, oh, stats and you need to keep ball, and obviously you do, but fortune favours the brave.
It's the balance. It's getting the balance, you need to know, right, you know,
and you have the right kickers on the ball.
And maybe there's a mismatch in there as well. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to identify that as well, that maybe there's a height advantage or something like that in your full forward line. And obviously, even more reason then to go a bit more direct.
Yeah, and I suppose going to Meade, where did you start? Like, it was awful.
It was awful,
yeah.
That's
it was just
the best you summarized it.
Yeah, just, you know, they're going, like, Meade, like, we were talking off air, like, yeah. You were there, you never got easy games again. You always had a bit of fun. Kerry played Cork and we knew Kerry were going to win there a week or two ago, and we were hoping you'd get something off Cork, and we got it.
Yeah.
We got it for 40 odd minutes, and they showed a bit of pride and a bit of fight, and it wasn't stupid fight. It was proper. They gave everything they had for 40, 50 minutes, and like we said, Kerry rolled out the experience in and got them over the line, whatever. But nothing.
Nothing, no. No, it was an awful performance by Meade, and like, I mean, I was growing up late 80s into the 90s on a diet of Dublin Mead, you know, all in, you know, physical battles, and an inch wasn't given or asked for. And it's just, for me, and even during my playing days, I think we played Mead 7 times in the championship during my time. Never had it easy all the way to the final whistle. It was a scrap, it was a battle, and a bit of football thrown in as well. And it, you know, going into Croke Park yesterday and just before throw-in, I still felt, you know, Dublin will win, but, you know, Meade could actually bring something. And it's just alien to me still, even though Dublin, obviously, the gap is huge for the last 7-8 years, it's still alien for me to see Meade getting such a bad beating by Dublin. It's obviously awful for Leinster Championship, awful for Meade, and where they go from here, I'm not sure. I think it'll be next to impossible for them to regroup for the back door. And it just, there was nothing to it. You know, Dublin, in terms of their skill set, their physicality, their conditioning, you know, their kick out, everything, they were just miles and miles ahead of Meade, and absolutely demoralising for the Meade supporters who were in Croke Park yesterday. And you'd wonder, I mean, the Meade obviously were training for the last 7-8 months, probably 4 or 5 times a week collectively, individually, but to go out and give that performance is massively disheartening for the county.
I think that's the end of the road for McEntee now, in terms of where he's brought the team, because I think it was 3-4 years ago, or was it 3 years ago, they got to Division 1 and the talk was, me, they're back. You know, they're not there, but they're on the right road, and it just hasn't seemed to regress now. And if you look at it from the outside, they lost Bernard Flynn in the under-20s. There was a row there with the seniors, and they just don't seem to be, you know, all pulling together, and it doesn't look good from the outside.
Dublin gave their under-20s a bad beating there in Parnell Park recently as well. Now, they did win, obviously, the All-Ireland minor, I think it was the last year, under 17. They're obviously very young, and I think they are trying to keep that group together year on year. But there's no guarantees with them. That's a long-term project.
That's another issue with this under-17s. They're a million miles away from being ready for senior.
Do you know,
an awful lot can happen between 17 and 20,
absolutely,
and then mine 17 and 22 or 3. I just like that. They kicked 114. It was a case that Dublin had the game won. It was over. They got 2 red cards. There wasn't much fight in them. It was just more silly,
petty
really.
Enough.
Petty enough. And
petty red cards.
Yeah, they were harsh enough. Like, but you could give them, you mightn't give them, but there was just nothing in it. But where do Dublin go? Where do Dublin go from here? Do they just, for me at the moment, they're just doing what they did. I don't even think they're even worried about who they're playing with. They're just getting their basics back right. Mm. If you look at the scores they're taking, I'd forget most of them, to be honest. They all look fairly similar.
Yeah.
They're back to doing what Dublin did better than everyone else, and that's just the basic skills, playing with pace. And do you know what? They looked hungry for work.
Yeah.
That's the scary thing about it.
They look hungry for
work. I do think they've evolved a little bit in terms of being that possession based team. What I've seen from them in the last few weeks, they look to be a little bit more urgent and a bit more direct going forward. We spoke about it, but just guys going, you know, towards the goal as opposed to going laterally and looking for sideways hand passes and that type of thing. So I think that's to be encouraged. But I think from Dublin's perspective, You know, that Newbridge defeat a few weeks ago to Kildare, and maybe the celebrations in Newbridge that day is something that will be in Dublin's head, in the players' heads over the next week or 10 days. I think deep down, coming away on that bus journey from Newbridge, they're thinking, I look forward to get Kildare now in a Leinster final, all going well at some point. And I think, look, Dublin v Kildare at the end of May in summer in Croke Park is very different than early March in Newbridge in a league game. So I think things are going well for Dublin at the moment. Yeah.
I think we might have poked the bear with too much there for a while. It was great crack while it lasted. But we'll go on to the other semi-final, Kildare and Westmeath. Look, it was a bit better game, but it was very much you let my forwards do the business and I'll let your forwards do the business. It was lovely stuff. It was great to watch. If I'm a Kildare fan, great attacking wise, forwards hurt anyone, but defensively,
you do that against Conan, the lads, you're in bother.
Yeah, but you're like, even if we're saying off air, the two goals Westmeath, they're nearly comical. Like, it was just open up the middle. You just can't.
You
do
shouldn't
that.
See it at that level. You really shouldn't. I think, well, the thing with Kildare, they're definitely scoring a lot better. Mm. You know, their forwards are racking up high scores. I think over the last four or five matches, including Championship and the league games, they're getting like 22, 23 points, which is not something you would have associated with Kildare over the last few years. So, you know, the likes of Johnny Doyle, who's probably in there as a sort of forwards coach, is doing a lot of good work. Daniel Flynn is playing well, but he seems to be a bit more unselfish as well. Like, it's something that's been a bit of a criticism of his, that he might have been a bit too goal hungry and maybe not giving the ball off to guys in better positions, but he's definitely evolved in that sense. But they look very open and just a little bit soft at the back. You know, like, you can't give away easy scores. If a team is going to get a score against you in a championship match in Croke Park, you got to make them work for it. And Westmeath didn't really have to work a huge amount for a lot of their scores yesterday, and that would be a concern for them going in against this Dublin forward line.
Yeah, I think Westmeath probably leave with a bit of goodwill. They played well, they'd be happy enough going forward now. Hopefully they can kick on now as well. But from a Kildare point of view, you're looking at it going, you need to shore up the defence, and it's very easy to say it, but up in the forwards in McCormack, very good. Highland was excellent. Kerwin, and a lot of them are scoring a lot of scores from play, which is a good thing about. And obviously we all know the danger that Daniel Flynn can have, and like you said, his game is evolving, but it's about giving these boys the platform behind them to go forward. And maybe it was a case of, look, we're playing Westmeath, we know we'll just about do enough.
Yeah, we'll go happy enough to go toe to toe.
They're in the first year too, you know. That's the thing. And you know, the management team have to find their way. They have to fit what suits this team. And you know, should they go out and play the same way against Dublin, they're going to get beaten. They're probably going to get beat well, but you know, they'll learn. And then it's the important thing is then to drive it forward for next year.
But do they go out and try and play they want to play and learn and lose and possibly lose heavily? Because the way Dublin are and the way they can create goal chances, which they did, they have done in the two games. Now they haven't scored the whole pile of goals, but one of the days the gates will open and there'll be goals galore. That could happen in the first 10 minutes. Do they try doing something different?
Well, like, if you go back to last year's Leinster final, under Jack O'Connor, the team and the management team shipped a lot of criticism after the game because they never went for it at any stage. Daniel Flynn got a great goal into Hill 16 to bring it to a 5-point game, but it never won. Never at any stage did they actually step up and say, let's actually put Dublin under pressure. So will they try and do that? I don't think that's something you can probably do in the first 10 or 15 minutes. You probably just need to stay in the game for a certain period of time, and then maybe a certain stage or 5 or 10 minute spell, you say, okay, we're going to push up on the kickouts or something like that and go for it. The last thing Kildare want is to suffer a bad beating, because what Dublin have done in previous years is that they've given a lot of the Leinster teams such a bad beating that they haven't been able to regroup then for the qualifiers, and the morale and everything is just completely sucked out of the group, and they end up losing in the next game as well. So there's a real balance there. But I think the Amos point, like, it is their first year in the job. They're only there, you know, 6, 7, 8 months. They're learning as a management team as well, amongst themselves as well as the players. So it's a great opportunity for them again. It's a bit of a free game in that sense. But they just need to be careful on how they go about it, because you know, they will have another game after the Leinster final, win or lose.
Yeah.
And that's something that maybe should be in the back of the management team's mind a little bit.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier, obviously Kildare beat them down Newbridge, and the celebrations were, look, they were to be expected.
Understandable, yeah.
But they were a bit over the top, and I do think they might be regretting it a small bit now, because I've said it a few times, a few Dublin boys, Fenton especially, a fellow who is so calm and controlled, that looks like he has a bit of steel in him. He looks a bit cranky, and all this stuff hurt the Dublin lads. So that's why I think they have to come with something different. I'm not saying all defensive like Jack did last year, because that doesn't work against Dublin, because they'll be patient, they'll cut you up. They'll have to come up with something different, whether it's dropping an extra man, just to frustrate them for a while.
Or maybe you allow Dublin to kick out, you know, and you bring your full forward line out to your own, to the 65 or something like that, just to give the defence an opportunity to set up structurally and contain them in that sense. For a period of time, you know, if you do that for the whole match, you're still going to lose by 8, 10, 12 points.
Just to have a curveball there, because it's like the same with Donegal. You go back to Barry's point about, can Donegal bring something different to the and throw that weak curveball? Can Kildare, you know, I don't think they're going to beat them, but, you know, just to make them... There's a price to be paid. If you are going to beat us, there's a price to be paid here.
I know it's easier said than done, but protect the D. We always say it, and you stop goal, protect the D. But when you look at the way Dublin are playing and the little pop balls in there, you sit someone there even.
Yeah.
Sit someone there, sacrifice one. Yeah, I mean,
if you had some sort of a heat map on yesterday's game and where all Dublin scores were, it's around that 5 or 10 yard radius outside the D area, and it doesn't matter who it was, there was 6, 7, 8 different guys there chipping over handy points.
I always
love
that as a defender. The more sweepers you see about the D, the more happier I was.
Well, that's it, they're doing something.
Yeah, but I was always shouting back.
As a forward though, like, I always felt that if I'm running up, let's say if I'm running out of defence with the ball and I'm running up, just seeing them there slows you down, because you need to take an extra step or an extra play. It gives one of the opposition forwards a chance to get a hand in or try and tackle you. It also makes you force your kick that bit further wide because you don't want it to be intercepted.
So you can't go down the throat. You know what I mean? Because there's extra bodies already there. Yeah.
It gives everybody that extra half a second or a second to get back and just filter body. So I think it's the way to go at the moment against Dublin, because they look like they're starting to find the groove. We know the way they want to play. Easier said than done to stop, but you just need to slow them down a small bit so you can protect that D, that scoring zone. And Kildare actually have so much pace and power in their team. If they get turnovers, they could cause trouble then going the other way.
And I think so. You know, I think it was a valid criticism of Dublin. I don't think any team really tested it out, that if you can get at the full back line, I know we've said it so many times, but nobody could ever do it. But if you can get at the full back line, and, you know, Daniel Flynn's the perfect target for there, that there's joy to be had, so that might be a possible route for them.
Well, that, you know, all the All-Irelands that Jim Gavin won, or majority of them, you had that Philly McMahon, Keane O'Sullivan axis, where Keane, predominantly time, was sweeping and was free, and that was perfect, and no one cracked that at all. They don't have a Philly McMahon, Keane O'Sullivan peak at the moment. Now, they still have very good defenders there, but maybe there's a little bit of vulnerability there, potentially, for opposition to get in it.
I suppose I don't want to go through the game without talking about Westmeath. Look, they kicked 2:15, played some good stuff at times. Like we said, it was very much shadow boxing. It was a case of there wasn't many tackles going in. It was a case of standing off. Can they give the Tailteann Cup a crack? They're playing Laois, who haven't been at the races at all.
You'd expect them to win that.
You'd expect them to win that, and a bit of momentum. And look, we'll talk about it a bit later on, but they need to... probably go last night, whatever, but get back in there, because it's a great opportunity for them now to kick on. Look, they
definitely
gave a good account to themselves now on the weekend. They have some very good footballers.
The Tailteann Cup could be perfect for them, you know, because if they, let's say, win the Tailteann Cup, I mean, that's four good matches for them under their belt, and it's another, what, 6, 7, 8 weeks of the group training three or four times a week together as well. Like, the worst thing for the teams that lose is that they don't regroup till November, and it's a horrible time of year to regroup and go training, and you're basically starting from scratch again, whereas they could actually get something out of the next 6 or 7 weeks with a view to when they go back training pre-O'Byrne Cup, that they're actually going to try and hit the ground running and really aim for promotion out of Division 3, because obviously you saw with the likes of Limerick and Louth got out of Division 3 as well, so there's no reason why Westmeath couldn't. But I was actually impressed with them yesterday. They more than held their own. They really put it up to Kildare, and, you know, they can come away and get back training tomorrow night with a bit of a bounce in their step, knowing that this is a competition that they can win.
And that's the great thing about the Tailteann Cup, is there's so many teams in there that generally back themselves and think, you know, we'll get a piece of silver. If they approach it right, that we'll get a piece of silver.
And that carrot is there, isn't it? Yeah. You win the Tailteann Cup, you're in the race sand, next year. Yeah. You know?
You get to a final, you're in Croke Park again. Mm. And I don't think you can ever turn down the opportunity
semi-finals
to
and
to
final,
win
yeah.
silverware in Croke Park.
Nah.
Yeah. Do you know?
We've had this discussion about the leagues, you know. Yeah. And I think it's good habits, you know, they're good to learn. Like, so if you're winning in Croke Park, you know, that's a good thing to get in the habit of.
Yeah. And down in Munster, we had Limerick and Tipperary, I won't call it Limerick juggernaut just yet, but they're moving in the right direction. I put up a tweet during the weekend, just another step in the right direction. I got the usual, oh, Kerry propaganda, Henley Munster final. But it's nothing to do with Kerry. Like, this is a county who were down Division 4, were struggling, and I've put the right structure. And people always go, oh, JP's money. And all. But I heard 5 or 6 years ago the work that was going on underage, and it's, look, they're getting it's coming to fruition now. Yeah. Look, Tipperary obviously fell backwards after winning the Munster Championship, and they're in a bit of a rebuilding state. But for Limerick, they're in the Munster final. It's a massive step for them. I'm delighted from, look, I don't expect them to beat Kerry. I don't expect it to be close, but it is steps in the right direction. And like we said, they're up to Division 2. So
they're a great example, aren't they, to other counties in terms of, you know, not maybe having that pedigree there. And certainly not well known as a sort of high profile county, and obviously overshadowed by their hurlers down there as well, and all the attention and focus that they get. But, you know, they've quietly gone about their business over the last 3, 4, 5 years. Steady improvements, which is key, you know, so they didn't maybe jump too many leagues too quickly. They're there on merit, and they've certainly bypassed Tipperary in terms of being, you know, second or third best within the province itself. So again, it's a free game for them in Killarney. It's going to be a big ask for them, but they look comfortable there at the weekend in terms of that 6-point victory over Tipperary. So you know, things certainly heading in the right direction for them.
And I think, you know, the model is right. Whatever they're doing, there's a lot of counties that can, you know, mirror it and just do the same, because it seems to be working out. And you mentioned JP there. Money helps, but it doesn't solve all the puzzles or, you know, all the problems that they are. Just good people need to start up and just get the right structures there.
Well, you just hit it there. The structures, the money can help you get the structures in place, and then it's up to having the right people and the personnel that want to be there and want to do it. Look, obviously I'm delighted as a Kerry person that Munster is getting stronger. Clare have been consistently Division 2 for a number of years. Tipperary were 2, fell down a bit after winning Munster, but they're trying to build something back, and obviously Limerick back in the table now as well, because Kerry and Limerick had some great battles in Munster Championships over the years. So it's good to see, and like that, not many counties are competing on both courts. They're in a Munster hurling and a Munster football final, so it'll be interesting. Look, I wouldn't be judging anything on the Munster final. I said before the show, I'm not going to be doing any more predictions.
I think the management secretly joined the club.
Yeah.
The management secretly, you know, they're not mentioned to the squad, but secretly they'll be planning for, you know, the Tailteann Cup rather than, you know, they'll know themselves.
The qualifiers. No, sure, they're up to Division 2.
Sorry. The qualifiers, and they'll be planning for that. So,
yeah, you'd hope that they'd get a look. You feel stupid just writing them off straight away, but look, realistically, you couldn't expect them to. But it's about putting in a shift, putting in a performance.
They want to get something out of it, yeah, definitely.
And they don't want to get to the point where they're demoralised, defeat. Yeah. As like Barry mentioned, the Dublin handed out so many of them, and, you know, it's hard to go back to training. You just, after taking a, you know, 15-point drubbing or whatever, you know, you don't want to get that kind of defeat, but you want to come out of it with a few positives and say, listen, we're still going the right direction here.
Yeah. And look, it makes things awkward for Kerry as well. Look, they're going to approach it. It's a Munster final, they're silverware. But realistically, they're going into that dangerous territory again of quarter final against, could be a Tyrone, it could be a Mayo, you just don't know.
Some games coming up in the qualifier setup now, and then whoever comes out of there are going to have so much momentum.
Yeah. And look, I suppose we won't just continually talk about provincial All Ireland, the Tailteann Cup. We've mentioned it a few times. It's got a bit of bad press recently. Like, how they couldn't have this organised months ago, I don't know. A few of the managers have come out, which understandably so. Even dividing into North and South, I can understand it for hopefully getting a couple of local rivalries.
I can't understand that. I can't. Why regionalise it? Why not just have the same model?
I suppose it's just for this year that they want to get the a couple of local rivalries, but people are sick of that anyway from the provincial. So I could see what they're thinking. It doesn't make sense, but
well, the Ulster counties, like, jeez, they know each other so well. Between McKenna Cup, four teams in Division One in the league, and you know, like the Ulster Championship.
Down are playing Kevin, like Down probably would be like, going, geez, I prefer to go anywhere.
Yeah, I don't see the Ulster wild attraction to that there.
Yeah, it's just small decisions like that. New York got a bye. New York need games more than anyone else.
Yeah, they get one game every year and they need games.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much discussion the last few years about how unfair and unbalanced the provincial championships are, because in Ulster you could be preliminary versus Kerry maybe getting two matches in Munster. So why just go, you know, all in, this is what we're doing, it's fair, there's no buys, there's no et cetera, regionally, that type of thing. But anyway, in my view, all of that should be forgotten about and parked, and we need to move on and just focus on the matches, and let's reassess the whole competition in August time when it's done. But I think we need to see some wave of positivity towards it, because it does have potential. And if this doesn't work, I don't know what's not going to work. And if counties don't buy into it, like, I mean, you'd really question their ambition. And, you know, I don't think any player has the right to say, I'm too good for the Telford Cup. You know what I mean? Or even a management team or a county board, whatever that might be. It deserves a full focus, in my view, of all the teams that are in it. And there is an incentive there. There is a carrot there for teams to get something out of it. So
I think Barry makes a great point there. I think he, you know, right, we have our bit of complaints, a bit of negativity, but we just got to roll on behind it. And, you know, the onus, like, we're not players anymore, we're kind of the media lads. So the onus is on us now to promote it and
embrace it.
Embrace it.
We just need a good first round, because there's arguably more teams that can win the Telting Cup than can win the All Ireland. So that's this could end up being a better competition. But obviously we need to promote it because we're getting a platform here, but we need to get it out there. We need to get it, be able to watch it at home. We need to be able to listen to it on the radio or drive. We need to be able to get to the games. They do need to start pushing it, because, as we said, there's more teams that can win this competition than can win the All-Ireland.
And it could be a stepping stone for some counties as well, in terms of, you know, trying to win a provincial title next year.
Meath Ladies
are
a prime example of that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a great, great point. You know, success breeds success. You know, if you go at it right, if you don't pat yourself on the back too much, you know, and if you just keep pushing forward, if you're winning in the big days, you know, and you get into habit of that, you're
every county has top class players, and like, we don't know enough about them, to be honest, you know. So some of these are going to get great exposure. I know there's definitely three live games on RTE come to two semi-finals and the final, but you know, to Eamon's point there, if you win the Telting Cup, you're going back training and doing a strength and conditioning program maybe in October time with a view to getting back on the pitch pre-Christmas, and there's a bit of a bounce and an energy there. And we've heard previously of some of the weaker counties not having their best players committing to it. More players might actually commit to your county then, knowing that there's a bit of a, there's something happening here, there's something stirring in the county, that we're heading in the right direction, let's get on board, you know.
I'm going for it. My two teams are London and New York. I want the two of them to
you
have
just
a good
stay
run
away from the predictions.
Yeah, I know. And I'm predicting, I'm just supporting, well, no, that's bad as well. But London and Sligo, like, they'll be sick of each other, but should be a good game, and one I'd be looking forward to seeing. But like that, it is a case of, we need all media platforms to promote it, get it going there. Cause, and it's not a token, I want to see these games.
And maybe drop ticket prices way down, or kids in for free or whatever. Just get the attendances up and the interest in it.
You need to, like, you're starting from the ground at the moment because it's a new competition. And to make it a success, you just need people to
be there and talking about it and getting the buzz of a good game. Because before it started, you know, from the looking on at it, you thought, this is going to be a brilliant competition if the players buy into it. And, you know, if the media are rolling and just get positive about it. Like,
yeah, and like, to be fair, I think the media do want to buy into it as much as possible. They need the GA to cop on a small bit as well, and get, like, we were too long waiting to find out what was going to happen. But we'll step away from it for a second, because I know you want to talk about another All-Ireland medal going to Tyrone.
There's
some players coming out of that team. Massive, a great win against Kildare. It was a great game. It was an explosive start, two goals in the first 80 seconds, and Rory Canavan, poor man, we're trying not to build him up too much, but 1-7 again, he's some talent.
Yeah, and I think last week we were talking about, is he going to be as good as the dad, like, and someone mentioned that he's going to be better, and, you know, he's on the right trajectory. And for all, like, I love winding Tyrone people up. Like, and
never noticed.
On think, and off the pitch.
I think Tyrone, Jay and Celtic fans are the easiest people to wind up if you just throw a bit of bait out.
And throw something out to Cassidy there with Celtic.
I love it, but I have way respect for them. I have way respect for what they do and how they go about their business and the way they, you know, even last year, the way they went and won that All-Ireland, there wasn't a lot of respect. They wouldn't have... Outside of the group, and us looking on wouldn't expect them, but inside they knew and they felt they were All-Ireland contenders, and it's the same. They're bringing young fellas up that believe they're All-Ireland, and you know, just the way they carry themselves, and you know, it breaks my heart to say it, but I do have a wide respect for them.
It was a great win for them. It was probably expected, I think, given the teams that they bet along the way. They were favourites going into the game, but I thought it was funny when he scored the goal and the camera went on to Peter and he was well reserved in his seat. He must have known the camera was going on. He's trying to keep it cool. Yeah, exactly.
They played some lovely stuff, and in fairness, like from Kildare's point of view, it is great. Look, they won't be... They lost the final, whatever, but they're moving in the right direction. A lot of good players there as well.
And Kildare Miners are in the Leinster final against Dublin as well. So there is good morale within that county, yeah.
Yeah, so obviously they're moving in the right direction. From the Tyrone point of view, and we were chatting about it, I'd be bringing 6, 8, 10 of them into this training panel straight away. Leave them, enjoy it for a couple of days, bring them in. Even if they're not in your plans for this year. Their expose energy, their enthusiasm. And Tyrone do have a lot of players at the moment who aren't playing at their level. If a young Rory Canavan or McLennan there, if they're coming in and they're bouncing, all of a sudden this young
plus lad, their squad was depleted by some seasoned players withdrawn earlier.
There's
in
a
the
void
year,
there.
You know?
There's a void there from the players that have left, and you know,
it could be the kick Tyrone need. Like
the best thing, like squads need energy about the group, and that's why it says when Tyrone lost, it didn't matter if they weren't playing or they weren't, but there was a void and there was an energy kind of left the group, and there's nothing better than them under 20s. They said they're probably not going to play. McLennan, you know, he's such a size of a lad, and he's a monster, and you know, Duher's probably going to say go easy in them seniors there.
But those young lads coming in, like in their late teens, early 20s, to a county squad or even a club team, they don't realise the effect that they have on the older lads. You know, when you're older, you're probably fed up seeing the same faces. Mm-hmm. When you see these fresh lads coming in, might be naive, but they're bringing a new level of energy to the group, and it actually energised the entire group. And actually, you get a kick out of it yourself, even if you might be there 10, 15 years at this stage. So it's a win-win, I think, in terms of a no-brainer and bringing a few of them in.
How, it's a long, long time ago now for you now, lads. You're older than me, but... I don't know what you remember, but how were you when you stepped up from that underage or being a young lad, like going into the senior setup?
Knew it all.
Chip
on the shoulder, carried myself. Terrible, terrible attitude, because that was just the culture there. And that's why it's so important that you're coming from the right culture, you're coming from good habits. When I think back, you know, we came through with me, Christy and Big Neil, and the only man that had a bit of cop on was Lacey. He had a kind of desire, and we were just there for the ride. We were just there for the crack. I don't know, Barry might have been different now, but for me,
We were actually quite fortunate, because it was the end of 2001. Tommy Lyons got the Dublin senior job, and he actually was decided to become the under 21 manager as well, and he really wanted to bring in youth. So you know, we were onto a winner there, that he wanted to give young lads game time, and he brought I think there was 5 of us straight into the senior team: myself, Stephen Cluxton, Alan Brogan, Darren McGee and Paul Casey. So we all started all the matches in 2002, got to the All-Ireland semi-final, and Armagh pipped us by a point, and we weren't too far off in All-Ireland, and we got to the All-Ireland under 21 final that year as well. And this is obviously very, very different times for Dublin. Dublin hadn't won a Leinster under 21 in like 20 years. Jeez. And they'd no Leinster title for 7 years. But there was a good mix, because there was still a few guys there. Like Jim Gavin was still there at the senior team. Declan Darcy was still there. Desi Farrell, Jason Turlock. So there was that older crew. And then we were all these new guys coming in that were, you know, destroying them in terms of all the fitness stuff, like the runs and the racing that we used to do. Like we were, so we brought a lot of energy into the group, and I think everyone fed off it. In 2002, we went on a really good run, Tommy was brilliant at that, in fairness, and Tommy has, you know, has his critics in terms of his 3 years with Dublin, but I would speak very highly of how he brought all of us through in 2002. And then he also brought in Brian Cullen, Paul Griffin, all these guys as well during that, into the training panel in 2002, and obviously the, you know, they've been key players for a number of years afterwards.
Yeah. I actually seen it with the club. I know it's on a smaller level, but when we were on Ulster in 2018, and good players, myself, Cass, Neil, Oran McNeilis were there. Like, we had a good team, but there was an influx of young fellas, and it brought the group on so much, the energy, the kind of ambition, and they had the right freshness. Attitude, the freshness, mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it was that there group that pushed us on. Like, people would have talked about Kevin and talked about me and Neil and Oran McNeilis, but it was that there group that actually mm-hmm. won the Ulster Championship from that.
Jeez, I remember going into the Kerry dressing room. I was actually still in school, and Kerry were after winning the All-Ireland. I was repeating the leaving, and it was over. We had just won a novice championship, so that's lowest of the. And I got a call when I was in the back of a bar in Glenbeck, and I thought it was one of the lads taking me. But we used to train above in the, we'd an AstroTurf at the side of the school. And of course, I was repeating the leaving cert, and my focus had now turned to football again. Mm-hmm. And I'd taken the day off school to rest up for my first evening with Kerry, and I'm driving in my father's Jeep, and the teachers are flagging me down going, "You weren't at school today." And I was sick enough now this morning, but I'm not feeling too bad now. And they're like, "Where are you going?" "I have training to go to." But I was so quiet in the dressing room. I was a mouse for the first couple of years.
What Dara said to you when you walked in?
Do you know, I'd probably ask me who I was. I literally just put on the gear, very sheepish on together.
Keep it to yourself.
But I actually couldn't get over, like, the level of fitness of a young lad to seasoned lad. No matter if they'd been on the beer the weekend or whatever, they had this reserve of energy. I remember going, "I'll run rings around these."
Yeah.
And struggling. Yeah. Really struggling. And the long runs, I was like going, how are these lads doing it? But I was like that for a couple of years. I made the debut against Tyrone, and like, just different mentality. Like, it does come down to who you're surrounded by, and you get a lot of your habits from watching other lads.
It's your environment, yeah.
So I was probably fortunate. I came into a successful
Would they have been crabbit? Would they have been cranky? You know, if you make a mistake on the training or in games, would they have...
Frightening.
Were they?
Frightening. I swear to God, you'd be, like, I'd play in the corner a good bit back then, and be corner forward, and could be Mark Shea or Tom Sullivan or Aidan Mahoney on you, and the ball would go into the opposition corner forward, and he might win it. And what they wouldn't call it, genuinely, I'd be there going, "If I don't want the ball up here now," they're going to be saying, "I used to be petrified of making a mistake."
Yeah.
Even probably a wrong thing as well. When I was in there first, if I had a shot on, but somebody better or bigger name than me, well, here you have it. Do you know, just nearly fear or whatever, and probably a bit of naivety
that
as well.
Intimidating dressing. I mean, just imagine what it was like walking in.
Like, I always look at in fellas who I would have been very close with as well after, as when I got comfortable, the likes of Declan Sullivan, Colin Cooper, they were 3 years old than me, not a lot, but they were men in there, like, at that stage. They were established. Like, Declan was the greatest leader I've ever come across from a young age. Like, it was a case of he's the man, just carried himself different, like, he was unreal. But it was just, like, sure, you had so many big names. It was intimidating.
And they'd be testing you as well, I'm sure, you know, because lads come in and out of the panel the whole time, and not all of them stay.
And testing, you know, and enjoying every moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Geez, they'd always be trying to catch up with something, but no, like, it was great. And do you know what, it's funny, when you go in as a young lad, you do your growing up in the dressing room. Do you know, and it's only when you get to the latter stage of your career you start enjoying that influx of young lads, because the dressing room is the only place where you don't have to get old. You can be as silly and immature as you want in a dressing room. And once you leave that dressing room, you have to leave that crack and that mess and behind you.
I think that's so relatable to compare. Like, see the nonsense we got up on the bus, you know, when we were 30-year-olds and there was 19, 20-year-olds. and the silly stuff we got up to in terms of practical jokes and, you know, just the mess
stupid
and
stuff.
All that. Yeah.
Ah, geez, I remember an away trip and myself and Mark Shea were rooming together and we'd just sneak out to the hall making these stupid howling noises. And we'd go back into the room then and you'd be laughing away at the shoulder. And you'd hear fellas up and down the hall going, what's that? And we'd be inside skidding. Then we'd go out and we'd do this noise again up and then back in. And we're going, like, if you actually pulled yourself aside and said, lads, come on, what are you at? Like, but there's your only chance of a bit of cracking. Like we were saying about the Tyrone lads coming into that dressing room that's underperforming so far this year. It'll give them a lift. It'll bring in energy and enthusiasm and stuff like that. So it could be the kick to Tyrone need. And I wouldn't be surprised if we did see him, McLennan or someone like that, stepping into the, maybe not the first 15, but getting a bit of game, because he's physically well able.
He's ready for it. Yeah, he's definitely ready for it.
Well, they'll be having a good eye on him. I mean, he'll be tested in the A versus B training matches in Tyrone now over the next couple of weeks if they are called in. So it may not be a surprise if one or two of them make into the Championship 26. And depends, obviously, on how far Tyrone go as well.
Yeah, I think Canavan is probably the prime candidate for game time. He's McLennan. He's a big lad. He loves contact at under 20, because like we would have looked at him with the Donegal thing. He loves contact. Won't get away with that. So it'll probably take a year or two to learn that and, you know, get ready for it. But Canavan, he's so smart and he's so just such a talent that he can just get in there and get game time.
Well, that's all we have time for in today's show. Big thanks to Barry Cahill and a jet lagged Eamon McGee. And join us next week for loads more GAA action.
You're listening to the GAA Hour with Darren O'Sullivan on Sports Joe.
The final whistle is all over. Jim Gavin, Jason Sherlock embrace. Dublin are the history makers.
Today, Sean Kavanagh, who is a brilliant footballer, but I tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
O'Sullivan, oh, that was absolutely brilliant. What about that for skill from Darren O'Sullivan?
Kieran McDonald, it's high, it's over. Will he ever get a more vital one than that?
The transition talk, I think Joe Bradley told us the production line was finished in Kerry. Well, Joe Bradley, what do you think of that?
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.